I'm very happy now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Mike Nichols. He's a National Geographic photographer. His newest book is Earth to Sky, published by Aperture Books. And he will be at the Lensic tonight at 7 o'clock presenting an evening titled Lions, Elephants, and Giants, Trials, Tragedies, and Triumphs. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Great. I'm glad to be coming to Santa Fe today.
So this book, which is about elephants, makes the reader, made me, fall deeply in love with elephants, whom you call the most caring and sentient creatures on Earth. How did you get involved with the elephants and the many people who love and study and care for them?
It was kind of one of those accidental moments. Early in my career, I went to Central Africa to photograph lowland gorillas for a project for National Geographic. I had never seen a wild elephant at that point. And I go to Central African Republic, the end of the earth, middle of nowhere, and I meet a man named Mike Fay. And he's going to try to help me see lowland gorillas. And they're hunted everywhere they live, so they're impossible to see. And he did his PhD without seeing them. But we're going to try to track them, and he's going to help me get a photo. Well, all the days while we're waiting and struggling with gorillas, he takes me to this clearing. And these are called bais in that part of the world. The elephants make them. And these are forest elephants. And that is a mecca of earth for elephants. And it's a place where forest elephants come out of the woods and dig salt and interact with other elephants. And I just got my first taste. But these elephants were incredibly frightened, always. Smell human, run away. So you had to climb up in a tree to photograph. And I really enjoyed the wildness of that part of Africa. And I spent like 15 years working there. But always, every elephant that I saw was frightened. And this book project builds upon this 15 years of frightened elephants. Then I went to a place in Chad where Mike again found me. He said, look, I've discovered this incredible ecosystem. There's herds of 1,000 elephants. We go there. They start getting massacred. And they're incredibly frightened. This was the beginning of the ivory crisis we're in now. I've got to give you this long-winded answer to set it up.
Then
people say, well, you've never seen anything but frightened elephants. You need to go somewhere where you can see how elephants really are. And Ian Douglas Hamilton invited me on another project in Samburu. And this was my third big elephant project. It becomes the third passage or song in the book called Family Ties. And that's where I saw elephants loving and touching and mourning and knowing the weather, and but also inches away from me, not being bothered by me at all. I wore the same clothing. I'm sitting in a car, but I let them make all the decisions. They come to the car. I don't go to them. My guide is a young Samburu man that could identify 600 different elephants. And it is exactly in that project that I decided to do Earth to Sky. And that was 2007, and here we are at 2013. And I finished that project with a project about orphans. And the miraculous part, and it's not a good miracle, is that we're in the biggest elephant crisis we've been in probably ever right now because of the new wealth in China. And I figured if I could put a document on the table that said, look how incredible they are, maybe that would be a voice for not killing them for a useless commodity. Because that's the simplicity of it.
Well, the way you describe them, they are, I mean, there's no other way to put it. They're so much like us, or maybe they're so much like us when we are at our best. I mean, they are intelligent and wise, as you put it. In fact, I wanted to ask you about that. What do you mean when you say that elephants are wise?
Well, you know, most of the wives' tales about elephants, great memory, mourning the dead, are proving out in science now. We're fairly arrogant about the natural world, so we put ourselves in this special place, and only great apes can get to be in that special place, or maybe some of our pets. But elephants, for me, go way beyond any of that, and they're transcendental. And you get that from watching them. You see how they take care of the young. The children are actually told by mom to help take care of the smaller children. And then when play gets too rough, the big brother brings the little kid back to mom, just like happened with me when I was a kid. And but yet they don't seem to have our dark side. I mean, they will eat themselves out of house and home if they're confined. They will become very aggressive towards humans. They will, but as soon as they realize that you're safe and you're nice, I hate to put it that way, then if they have the luxury, they will not attack you. But you know, they're very, very defensive of each other. It's just, but more to the point of your question, it turns out their hippocampus, the part of their brain that deals with memory, is much, much larger than any creature on Earth, and it's because elephants have so many big needs in the environment. Well, it's just a lot of water and a lot of food every single day. So elephants have to know their environment incredibly well. So they'll have a matriarch that might be 70 years old, and she's using her knowledge of when the worst drought was. So she'll be able to find water at the worst times. But even other examples are, there's something in their body that's barometric and tells them that there's a storm going to be happening in 3 days. I mean, we don't have, if we have those things, we've lost them. Elephants are totally tuned into their environment, but they're also tuned in socially. They're not, you know, they go beyond what we'd like to think animals are, and that's been a lot of the animals have taught me in my life of looking so hard at them. I just stare, because to make still photographs that translate to these concepts we're talking about, it has to be almost exceptional. And so they've just taken my heart once I started focusing on elephants that weren't afraid. All those other pictures are valid because they're beautiful environmental pictures, or they're attacking, or there's stuff going on. But it wasn't until I got introduced to these family groups. And then the orphans, because the orphans can touch you. You're able to sit with them, and then you realize even more. It's just, in a way, it's just devastating, but it's also very spiritual. And that's, tonight when I talk, I'm going to try to show that to the audience. And I guarantee you, everybody will get it. And what people will be saying is, how can we help? And that's the very point. You know, it's not an African problem. It's not just a Chinese problem. It's a global problem. And the quotes in the book, which are famous writers talking about that elephants should just be there. You know, it's not about science. It's just, we need elephants just because they're elephants. And I think we'll all, you know, my mission, and hopefully we'll end up in China with this, is to, we just can't slaughter them for their ivory. And even if they were just animals, it would be different. But look, they're really special and complex. And if you'll let yourself, they will show you that.
There's a quotation from Peter Matheson in the book that was so beautiful, and he said, he describes some things that the elephants do that's sort of strange, and then he says, "There's a mystery behind that masked gray visage, an ancient life force, delicate and mighty, awesome and enchanted, commanding the silence ordinarily reserved for mountain peaks, great fires, and the sea." And that, to me, I mean, I've never met an elephant. I don't even know that I've seen an elephant in a zoo, because I don't like going to zoos. But that kind of, in a way, expresses the majesty that you experienced. I mean, did you get to know any elephants and they you in your journeys?
What happens is, to photograph them with the intimacy that I was trying to, we wore the same clothing every day. We had the young Samburu man with us. And he would tell me, "Oh, that's Babylon of the biblical towns. And that's, oh, Babylon's crossing the river, and she's crossing the river with her daughter." Wait, her daughter, a newborn. Her daughter's daughter, another newborn. And her daughter's daughter's daughter. So she had three generations of baby elephants crossing the river, and the river was flooded, and she got them against her body so she could make an eddy for them to cross. Another Babel in that same family is lame. She got mounted by a large bull when she was too young, so she's broken. And Babylon always slows down the journey to make sure Babel can keep up. Babel's just an ante now. But you know, these names help you sort things out. There's the biblical towns, the American Indians with Navajo, the poets with Maya Angelou. And what happens now when I see the word Maya Angelou, I don't think of the poet. I think of the elephant that I saw. And that's something that starts to happen to you. They have distinctive markings. Like Babylon has a hump on her back and then a hole in her ear. But she was incredibly matriarchal. She never really trusted me. You know, everybody else in the family would, but she would always keep kind of a distance. And I respected that because it's her job to take care. And it wasn't until pretty far into the project that I, you know, would notice when there was rain in the distance that Babylon would lead everybody leaving the park to go out to forage. And they have to do that when there's rain so they can have water and that rain brings more food. But I noticed that four or five other herds would go with them. And that turns out is a clan. And I didn't, you know, elephants have clans. So everybody that they know can be a clan, but a matriarch has her own immediate family. Like the royals were the dominant family with Victoria. But the problem is, I'm making your audience think of Victoria the queen. I'm thinking of Victoria the elephant, who was a queen in her own right, and Cleopatra. And literally, within a few days, I would know the personality of that elephant. Because if I got the dreaded head shake, which is, you've messed up your protocol and you've done something wrong, you know, I would apologize. And I felt like they understood the apology. I would just, you know, I could photograph them from inches away. I'd put a camera on a stick and put it on the ground. They would, as long as I behaved, I could do just about anything. I couldn't get out of the car. You know, that's, in Central Africa, I always worked on foot. It was very dangerous. Elephants do see legs on the ground as humans, and the humans are threats. Some way you're in the car, you're something else. With the orphans, it was very, very intimate. But they just kept on getting into my head, and they'll do that to all these writers that you see quoted in the book. And I'm going to see if I can transfer this to our audience tonight, and I believe I can.
Well, I mean, the book comes across as a kind of visual love story to me. I mean, everything that you talk about, and there's a lot of information in it about elephants and about specific places and how you took some of the pictures and some of the people you got to know there and biologists and all of that. And yet what comes through most of all is this love that you have that does get transferred. And people talk about, especially scientists sometimes talk about how it's such a mistake to anthropomorphize other species and to attribute human characteristics to your dogs or mice or whoever. And at the same time, what one gets from a book like this and what one gets from kind of seeing the bigger picture in an empathetic way is we're not necessarily anthropomorphizing them. We're recognizing our common essence in a really profound way.
Well, again, I'll keep thanking you because your translation of what I try to do is very accurate. And look, I've been in this a long time, 30 years. And early in my career, we always fought anthropomorphism. We thought it was wrong. But the reason it was wrong is because you were trying to put human aspects into this creature, this mountain gorilla or whatever. That's not what it's not about them being human. It's about them having human, no, it's about them having characteristics that we honor amongst ourselves. And that means we have rights because of those things. We, you know, we give ourselves rights. I mean, so much of the world's resources are about us. The environment gets a tiny little 1% maybe. But what I'm trying to preach is that we're all tied together. And if we shit in our nest, we're going to mess up the whole thing. And you just can't have an earth without elephants walking it. And it's like, regardless of all this, what we might say anthropomorphizing, it's they are complex and they care about each other and they're protective of each. So those are catches that I feel like are saying that, well, then we can't slaughter them for a useless commodity. We have a much bigger problem in Africa that we can't deal with, which is elephants in your garden and lions eating you. And I'm going to show the two most reviled creatures in Africa, the lions and elephants, but the ones that we love the most, kind of. And the big issue is living with them. But if they're a commodity, we're turning lions into tiger bones now. So we're going to start exploiting lions for their bones or for their aphrodisiac quality. So, but this ivory business is completely a useless commodity. It's just been something that's been traded for centuries. But the problem is right now with this middle-class wealth in China, everybody can afford a $75,000 ivory ball or a $50,000 carving. And the carvings are actually Buddhist and religious, and they make good omens. But it's made of an elephant's tusk. And we are literally killing baby elephants for tusks the size, not much bigger than your thumb, you'll kill an elephant for. And a Chinese worker makes $300 a month. He can turn it into $3,000 with ivory. You can't mark up gold. There's no other commodity you can smuggle out of Africa that has the markup of ivory. Revolutions are insurgencies, not revolutions. That sounds high-minded. Rebel events that are just chaos are being funded now by killing elephants. The clearing that I told you was my first entry to elephants 20-something years ago was just attacked as CAR, Central African Republic, has a rebel movement. And they slaughtered like 50 elephants in that clearing until Mike, the man who brought me there in the first place, he flew over with a bag of money and bought everybody off. But they know that ivory is worth enough to buy their weapons. And as long as that's standing, and that's happening right now, we're going to lose every elephant we have. And it, like in the place in Chad, which is chapter 2 in the book, Ivory Wars. There is, there were 4,000 elephants when I was there. It dropped to 400, 4,000 to 400 before it stopped. And it will take 40 years for it to go back with incredible protection. But the habitat's intact, so it can come back. And that's what I'm hoping with this book. We get to the heartstrings and the emotional aspect like you're talking about, but the goal is to stop the slaughter.
We're talking to Mike Nichols, about his book Earth to Sky and about his presentation tonight at the Lenzing Performing Arts Center. I mean, in so many ways, it's like the illegal drug trade in the sense that there are incredibly brutal mafias and their soldiers on the ground. And there is this insatiable demand, and as we know from the drug trade, you can try to get rid of supply all you want, and somebody else will just come up and offer more supply. You have to devalue, in this case, the ivory, and you have to reduce the demand. How are people trying to do that?
Well, that's the real question, and that's, I just was in London, and we looked at each other, because that's what the audience wanted to know. How can we help? And I actually think there's a two-pronged approach. And one would be African leaders saying to the Chinese leaders, look, you want to exploit our country, you want to build roads, you want to get the minerals out, you got to stop this ivory business. Then the second would be changing the youth in China, changing the culture in that massive place to respect something that is disappearing like elephants. That's a real uphill battle. We're offering the pictures from Earth to Sky to be used in billboards. I should probably do a university tour if I can get it organized. But that's just my little, everybody's trying because we realize we're right in the crisis. But if we don't change the demand, then no matter what we do, if we don't make it useless and lose its value, because the one thing I do want to point out, and then is that the poacher is a poor guy. He's just doing it for the money to feed his family. I mean, there are some cases where, like in Chad, where it is evil guys. The Jinjaweed are devil on horseback, and they would just kill anything for the money. But there are sometimes it's just a pygmy that a guy brings a shotgun to, and it's the same pygmies I love to walk in the forest with. They do it. They just don't understand it. So I don't like demifying those guys. It's really the middleman that has to be dealt with, and then the Chinese market. And they're still building ivory factories, and they got three seats that are taken, and they're training young carvers. Well, what are they going to carve? You know, baby teeth? So that's the part, is we just got to try to do something. And I know I'm preaching to the choir in the United States, but hopefully this will lead to something.
Mike Nichols is a National Geographic photographer. His newest book is Earth to Sky, published by Aperture Books. And he will be at the Lensic tonight at 7 o'clock, presenting an evening titled Lions, Elephants, and Giants, Trials, Tragedies, and Triumphs. Thank you so much for being with us on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe.
I'm so happy to be there.